WFORadio.com presents NHRA Nitro.
I'm Joe Costello, and this is WFO Radio NHRA Nitro. A weekly look inside the baddest motorsport in the world, NHRA Mellow Yellow Drag Racing.
It's side by side, it's competition, and it's who wins, and then the chair of the crowd.
Join me as we go WFO with the stars of drag racing.
Hey, I'm Bob Tasca.
I'm Tony Schumacher.
Hey, you're with Matt Hagen.
Hey, this is Ron Capps, Matt Hagen's personal friend. You're on WFO.
NHRA track announcer Alan Reinhart stops by each week to break down each race and answer your email questions.
I mean, the Nitro cars put on a tremendous show. They're otherworldly machines. But for people that are really interested in cars, I mean, you wander through the Superstock pits, and if you're wondering why you don't see 69 Camaros running around on the street anymore, it's because they're all out there in the stock and Superstock pits.
Racing fans from around the globe, it's time to go WFO with Joe Costello.
WFO Radio, we are back. Hello, NHRA fans. Welcome to another edition of WFO Radio, NHRA Nitro. Great show. No national event this week, so we get to delve into some other things. If you click the link for the very first time, if you're a fan of NHRA Mellow Yellow Drag Racing, that's great. If you're a fan of one of our guests, that's great, too. Stick around. Check out the show. You can bounce around in the audio file and hear what you want to hear. We have got Victor Cagnazzi going to be on the show, going to talk about the Copo Camaro program and the whole factory support that has gotten so huge with the Copos and all the other cars out there in the factory showdown. Victor is going to be on the show, also talk Gray Motorsports Pro Stock in the NHRA. And I know you probably clicked the link to hear Vanilla Ice. Vanilla Ice going to be on the show. Ice Ice Baby, but also DIY Network. And the shows that he's got going on, he's going Amish, he's got the Vanilla Ice Project. This guy has had a huge resurgence in his career from the days that I remember cruising around the streets of South Florida listening to Ice Ice Baby with my high school classmates. Now he is back, and he is bigger and better than ever, apparently. We caught up with Vanilla Ice at the Daryl Gwynn Foundation White Party this past week at the Hard Rock Hotel and Casino. We're going to speak with Vanilla Ice about his time at the Texas Motorplex watching Eddie Hill and Daryl Gwynn battle it out on the 1320. He's a car guy. We're going to talk about it. Vanilla Ice coming up on this show. And Steve Reyes, a legendary drag racing photographer in the NHRA, has had a tremendous career, so much so that CompetitionPlus.com has put together one of their Legends Series documentaries on him. We're going to speak with Steve about the documentary and, of course, his career. So get in, sit down, hold on, and get ready. We're about to go WFO. And we start each show off the same way with this man, the voice of the NHRA, Alan Reinhart. Alan, welcome back.
Joe, great to be here, as always.
Well, all right. What's going on in Alan's life when the Mellow Yellow Series Tour is not in action every weekend for 4 weeks in a row?
Well, at this particular point in time, the main focus around here is my 67 Mustang. I got the engine back from the dyno shop we talked about a couple weeks ago, and just having to do some fitting and make some brackets, and there's nothing about this thing that is a standard stock, you know, run down to AutoZone and grab some pieces and bolt them on stuff, so... Just getting all that handled, getting it, making it happen, and getting it a little bit closer, a little bit closer.
Well, that has got to be very exciting. I know that you were, you had your dyno report, and you were looking at it. I think, is that when it really became real for you, like, wow, it's time to put this thing together?
After I picked it up and brought it back. You know, having the engine and the car both in the same shop and ready to actually go together. You know, all the time I was dumbing it together and putting it in and fitting the headers and making the mounts and doing the stuff, it was just kind of busy work. But it's to the point now that the next time the motor goes in the car, it should be going in to stay. So I've got it sitting on the bench right now just because that's easier. You know, trying to build alternator brackets, I'm having to actually manufacture a lower pulley to run the alternator with, and some of the other stuff. It's just easier to do that on the bench than it is in the car, so I'm going to get it all done before the motor goes in. But that's my project. I try to make sure that every day when I leave the shop, I've at least made a little progress. If it's not leaps and bounds, at least it's a move forward.
Now, there's one aspect of this that has kind of taken on a life of its own. Marvin Rodak from RodaksCoffeeAndGrills.com is an avid listener and has been following the storylines. Not only does he listen to WFO, but he listens to the NHRA.com audiocast on the mobile application. So basically, everything that is being said out there, he is aware of. He has sent me an email today, and the timing is perfect, about a couple of things, but this is the part that is more pertinent to you. Another idea is to get Jason Lyne on with Reinhardt and Billy Meyer and set up a Texas shootout for next year at the Motorplex. Jason's wagon versus Alan's Mustang. Have Billy put on the show. Plenty of time to set it up, get those cars down to Texas. Best out of three runs, put up or shut up. What do you think, Alan?
If wherever Jason wants to go is fine with me. He has, I think, more of a transport issue than I do, just because his car is so big, his car wouldn't fit in a transporter. Mine would. No, that's not a slam. I mean, it's a big car. It's a full-size station wagon, and, you know, he actually drove the thing home. I don't know how much background on the story, but that car was located originally in Arizona, and I went and bought it for him and drove it up to Vegas, and then he drove it home from Vegas because the car was physically too big to go in the transporter. You know, there's only so much room on the top deck where they put the pro stock cars, and the car's too tall to go in there. Mine is small enough to fit in a transporter. It's been in trucks before, so in theory, I could shove mine in somebody's trailer here in Arizona and just have it go wherever it needs to go, and his is either going to have to be delivered or he's going to have to drive it. So we'll figure it out.
Maybe you should both have to drive them there.
That's fine. I mean, I wouldn't be sticking mine in a truck because it's not roadworthy. I'd be doing it because, you know, that's easier than driving it 1,500 or 2,000 miles. You know, it's my car is not really designed for comfort. It's loud, obnoxious, doesn't have power steering, doesn't have air conditioning. It's, you know, a 67 Mustang that was a hot rod when it left the factory, not a luxury car when it left the factory, and it still is. You know, Jason's, on the other hand, does have air conditioning, does have power steering. Jason's is a really, really neat car. I mean, if you're talking about, hey, you know, let's throw the kids in the back seat, go get some ice cream, or, you know, let's drive it out to Z-Max for Wednesday night grudge night and make some hits, it's a really, really neat car. Mine is a loud, obnoxious race car with license plates, so that's the basic difference between the two of them.
I like the fact that listeners out there are just kind of getting into the idea of the smack talk. That, to me, that's the best part.
Well, you know, Jason and I are very good friends, and, you know, we're both obviously pretty big car guys. You know, he told me a couple weeks ago, we're standing in the door of the Pro Stock trailer, and he pointed at the Summit Camaro, and he said, don't forget, I can take one of those motors and put it in my car if I have to. And I said, well, you might want to call your header builder and get started on that, because that's going to be about the only chance you got. And, you know, it's been fun. And, like I said, his car is a really, really neat car. On the cool scale, his is going to be above mine, no question about it. But on the fast scale, mine's going to be faster. That's just all there is to it.
Well, there you have it. Some interesting news just hit in the email box as of time of interview. That Saturday, November 1st, we are all cordially invited to a major sponsorship announcement from John Force Racing, located in the pit area between John and Courtney's pits at the Strip in Las Vegas, at Las Vegas Motor Speedway. There will be photo ops, one-on-one Q&A following the announcements, plus light appetizers will be served, Alan. That's kind of interesting, intriguing.
Very cool, very cool. I mean, I know that, you know, John had a lot of stuff that he'd been working on, and I know that he also was, you know, playing the cards very close to the vest. And, you know, great news. Hopefully it is a, you know, I know what he was trying to put together. You know, he had a number of companies that he was talking to that wanted to get in at a major associate level or wanted to maybe do a one-year deal. And John was looking for a major sponsor, at least 3-year deal. I know he's got 5 years, I believe 5 years with the Auto Club and either 3 or 5 with Traxxas. And so he was kind of pushing because he doesn't want to have to go through this year after year after year. He wants to have a long-term plan in place. So hopefully this is something they're going to be, hopefully that's what the announcement is. I guess I should put it that way.
I agree. It will be interesting to see, and maybe there will be more after this as well. This weekend, the California Hot Rod Reunion, the whole nostalgia scene continuing to grow and flourish. We're going to have Steve Reyes on. He's going to talk a little bit about that and being there the first time around. But this is kind of an event that everyone tells me that I got to hit one or the other before it's over for me.
you know, it's a major, major deal, and especially for guys that are into the nostalgia stuff. You know, the nostalgia funny car movement has just gone crazy. you know, the dragsters are, I don't think they have quite the numbers of the funny cars, but just because the funny cars are just so cool, you know, that walking through the pits and looking at them, and obviously you can tell that, okay, that one's a Camaro, and that one's a Nova, and that one's a Mustang, and that one's a Firebird, or whatever, you know, and the modern technology applied to the older school rules. You know, they have smaller blowers, they have smaller fuel pumps, but they still have, you know, good cylinder heads, they still have good rotating assemblies, which is kind of a weak point if you're talking about funny cars from the 70s, but they put on just a tremendous show. You know, there'll be probably 30 funny cars trying to qualify for the 16 spots. There's a lot of the big show teams that are now getting involved with some of that stuff, and you know, like I say, if you're into the nostalgia, it's like going to Disneyland. It's just amazing stuff.
Very, very cool. Now, we do have some questions from the audience for you this week. Are you ready to rock?
Okay.
Your favorite part? Come on, don't act like you don't love it.
Oh, yippee, questions, yay!
This one coming from Kenneth. Kenneth asks, how much does a Top Fuel team spend to run a full season? Obviously, approximately, says Ken.
Well, it depends on how you do the math. You know, Bob Vandergriff doesn't have the overhead that Don Schumacher does. But Bob Vandergriff also doesn't have 60 employees in the shop building heads, building blocks, building chassis, you know, mounting bodies and keeping that stuff running. So it really kind of depends on who you ask. I think if you had the car, you had the truck, you had the trailer, you've got, you know, your five or six motors and your spare parts, an operating budget, I think it could be done for $750,000 if you already had all that stuff and if you don't blow up a lot of stuff. You know, you go out one time, you know, blow a tire, twist a chassis, crash a car like Antron's done, and all of a sudden you're $150,000 in the hole. So, you know, the real answer is it depends. You know, the way that John Force runs his operation, the way that Don Schumacher runs his operation, is much more costly than the way Big Jim Dunn runs his. You know, Jim runs conservative, will sit out qualifying sessions here and there, doesn't blow up a lot of stuff, doesn't hurt a lot of parts, and he's able to do it for considerably less money. So, you know, the real answer is probably it depends. If you know, I don't think you could start up and run a team for less than $1.5 million or $2 million a year. But then you also, you know, there's just so many things that weigh into it. How many full-time guys are you going to have on the road? How many guys are you going to have flying in? Do you want to stay at, you know, Motel Sixes, or do you want to stay at Marriott's? There's just so much different stuff that weighs into the equation, and it all has to be factored in.
I want to stay at Marriott's. That's just me.
Well, I just want to, you know, I don't mind a Motel 6 as long as there's, you know, an Applebee's next door or a Chili's or someplace where I can do my beer and burger thing at the end of the day.
Isn't,
you know,
that
one thing I've found out over the years, those $400 a night hotel rooms look exactly the same as the $59 hotel rooms when you're asleep. You know, the only difference is the towels are a little nicer in the expensive places. But, you know, that's a very difficult number. You know, that's a very difficult number to put your hand on because of, you know, just exactly how do you intend to do it. You know, if you've been to John Force's shop or Don Schumacher's shop or Coletta's shop, you know that their overhead is considerably more than, you know, some of the other guys that are not manufacturing as much stuff and are buying stuff. And it's just a different approach. You know, how much does it cost to field a major league team? Well, if you do it like the Yankees, it's a little different than if you do it like, you know, the Mariners. And there's no one magic figure that covers everything there.
Next question, this one coming from Ron. Is there any speculation that Mike Edwards will possibly be coming back to Pro Stock next season?
None that I've heard. And the last time I talked to Mike, he didn't sound real enthusiastic about getting back on the road. He was kind of enjoying taking a break and being at home. You know, he's been out there touring for years and years now, and I think it was a classic case of he didn't realize exactly all the stuff he was missing at home until he had a chance to be home. You know, he did say that, like everybody does, you know, he misses the people more than anything, you know, the interaction and you know, just seeing the guys on a weekly basis. He was very adamant about the fact that he was not retiring from racing forever, that there would be another chapter, and he just wasn't sure what that chapter was yet. So I guess time will tell.
Next one from John, a.k.a. Flashover Racing, who came out to Reading and brought me a cool shirt. I would like to know, is there a website or a book explaining the classes for drag racing? I have a rule book, but it does have the classes and times, but is there something that breaks it down even more? Just trying to learn more as I build my Camaro. Thanks, guys, and WFO, says John.
I guess the question would be, what are you trying to build a Camaro for? If you're putting it together to be a super street, super gas car, or a super pro car, or a pro bracket car, that's different than if you're building it to be a be altered. And that would be, you know, the best thing to do would be determine what you're planning to do with the car and then talk to somebody who's doing that. If you're looking to make it a stocker or a super stocker, go to the races, Lucas Oil events or national events, and walk down into the stock pits. You know, that's something that I know you've done a lot this year, Joe. And you know, if you walk up to a guy and say, hey, I'm looking at building a car like that, can I ask you a couple of questions? 99% of the guys are going to be more than happy to talk to you. You know, it's like any other business. There's like three jerks out there. But but the vast majority of the guys will be more than happy to help you, to give you pointers, to, you know, tell you, hey, here's the guy you need to call if you want to ask about engine stuff. Here's the guy you need to call if you want to talk about roll cage stuff. That'll, you know, get you set on the right path. And that's probably the easiest thing. You know, there are some places on NHRA.com that explain the different classes. I'm not sure really where else. There's a couple of, you know, on the alcohol stuff and on comp eliminator stuff, InsideComp.com has got a lot of inside information on that, but maybe not as much of the technical stuff. You know, my best advice would be, you know, determine what your ultimate goal is with the car, and then go to the races and talk to somebody who's doing that. And it doesn't have to be, you know, if you want it to be a super stock car, you know, you don't necessarily have to go find a guy that has a 71 Camaro with a small block in it. Just go find a David Rampey, a Dan Fletcher, a Byron Warner, you know, in your part of the world, the stock and super stock guys, you know, a Pete Bianda would be more than happy to talk to somebody. An Anthony Bertozzi would be more than happy to talk to somebody about, you know, hey, here's what you need to look out for. Here's, you know, the path to take. Here's the guy to call that can help you out in this or that particular situation. But, you know, the guys that are doing it are probably your best source of information if you're trying to put together a car for a particular category.
On that note, and this is a question from me, as I'm glancing over the Gainesville Lucas Oil Series results, and I see that Dan Pomponio runner-up to Matt Gill and Alcohol Funny Car, and Dwayne Shields wins that race. But I'm starting to notice there's these index classes, Alan, the 10-flat index, the 11-flat index, the 12-flat index, in addition to traditional Super Comp, Super Gas, Super Street. And those index classes, people have asked me questions about those specifically a lot in the last month and a half, 2 months. These are no throttle stop index classes. You got to run wide open, no throttle stops allowed. You got to figure out how to get your car to hit the 10-0, 11-0, and 12-0 without throttle stops, correct?
Well, without electronics.
Without electronics.
Like, yeah, I think most of the guys that run in that category have the old school throttle stop, which is basically the bolt under the pedal. So, you know, you are allowed to make adjustments to throttle a car back. It just can't be done electronically. So if you've got a car that runs, you know, whatever, 970, and you're trying to run it 10 flat, then you would put a mechanical stop so that the pedal will only go 80% of the way down or whatever it is, and then you make your adjustments that way. But it's a great category or categories where the local bracket racers, you know, a guy that runs Super Pro or Pro Eliminator that maybe doesn't have a throttle stop, you know, he's got a car that just goes out every weekend and he dials it at 950 or he dials it at 1060 or does whatever he does with it, doesn't really have an opportunity to come out at a Lucas Oil event and be competitive if he either A, doesn't have a throttle stop, or B, isn't familiar with running it. You know, he's going to get mowed down by the super gas guys pretty quickly, and that will dissuade him from wanting to come back and get involved again in the future. So you put together a category like this. I know that there have been a couple of times when they've, and it's all done, you know, different divisionally, But there have been a couple of division racers that I've seen where they've just had, you know, a street bracket come out. Because the guys that come out and support your track week in and week out would love to have a chance to come out and be a part of the event and be a part of the Lucas event. But, you know, a guy that drives his car back and forth to work and then runs, you know, 15:50 on the weekends and has fun and supports your track and is out there all the time, there's no place for him in the Lucas series. And so some divisions and some individual tracks will just throw that extra bracket in, and that's something that can be done a lot. There's a lot more flexibility at the Lucas Oil level than there is, obviously, at the Metal Yellow level. But, you know, it's just a terrific way that allows the local racers that are out there supporting your track week in and week out and coming out and being a part of it to get a chance to come out and be a part of the big show and run for a Wally and have some fun with the weekend.
Totally agree, and I was that person at one point running a pickup truck, wanting to be there. I was going to go and watch anyway. The idea of being able to race in some category, I was very happy to hand over my entry and then lose it. Final question from Christian, who we met out there in Reading at the track. Alan told everyone about the blower pulleys and how they can change them in the lanes to make more power or take power away as needed. What are some chassis adjustments that they can make in the lanes right before a run as well to better the car's chances of a successful pass? Asks Christian, who I met his whole family there, and they were great.
Well, on a nitro car, there's basically none. You know, there is no suspension on a nitro car, so there is no chassis adjustment. You know, could you move 5 pounds one way or another? Yeah, maybe. Is that going to make a difference? Probably not. You know, the biggest things they can do after they leave the pit area, the blower pulleys that we did in NHRA 101 is what he's referring to, that plays on the Jumbotron. They also can change the timing curve. You can just plug a little handheld computer into the ignition box on the car and change the timing map, which will either add or take away power. You'll also see them change the clutch flows. Usually they'll watch, you know, crew chiefs will watch cars go down in front of them, and they'll maybe see something that they didn't realize, get a reading, whether it's one way or the other. And then you can change, since it's a fluid flow that allows the throwout bearing to move, which brings the clutch in as the first basically 2.5 seconds of the run. And that's an adjustment that can be made either more aggressive or less aggressive. And if you have time, you can even change the weight, but you'd need to make that decision probably at least 3 or 4 pairs back in line to have time to get the bell housing cover off, get in there and either add or subtract the physical weight, how much is on the clutch. But you'll see guys pretty regularly, if you're paying attention, sometimes just before they start the car, with a little box in your hand that is basically the size of a box of business cards, maybe not quite that big, and it's a part of the ignition, and they'll plug into the MSD box and change the timing map either up or down to either add power or take away power. Or you'll see the Hadman cars, I think the McKinney cars, all have the toy box about in the same place. You'll see the drivers open the crew chief open a trap door just in front of the driver's foot box, just in front of the feet, and reach down in there. And they're making an adjustment there to the clutch flows, either making it more aggressive or making it less aggressive when the clutch starts coming in about 1.2 seconds out.
Very good. Great questions. And, Alan, thank you very much for answering them for the WFO radio audience. I thought that was excellent. Excellent answer. And the chassis part, no. What about a wing adjustment on a funny car? I've seen an NHRA 101 on that as well. Is that a last-second move?
Yeah, that can be done when you're about 2 back. You know, for the most part, the top fuel guys run maximum wing all the time because they can put more power to it. You never see a top fuel car with more traction than it needs. Funny cars are a little bit different. And they're just, you know, funny cars sometimes they will weigh the maximum traction versus maximum drag, and they'll change the rear tailgate on the funny car either up or down. You can see a lot of guys spinning the tires down track. They might move it up a little bit to try to add downforce. But because funny cars just are not as aggressive as top fuel cars, just from the design of them and everything about them, they're just different animals, even though they use a lot of the same parts. So there's some adjustability built in there, but the top fuel guys rarely make wing adjustments, and I don't know that I've ever seen a guy doing it in the staging lanes.
Excellent. Great job as usual, Alan. And I'm looking at the story for the Vegas Fan Fest going on October 30th. That is still several weeks away. This little bit of a break is getting us all geeked up for the final two races of the NHRA Countdown. In the meantime, though, we'll have a little time to talk and kick around some questions. I greatly appreciate it.
Right on, right on. In the meantime, hopefully I'll get the motor in my 67 Mustang and get closer and closer and closer.
What is the timeline for that? I mean, obviously we're not holding you to this, but if by Vegas, what would you like to have finished?
By Vegas, I would very much like to have the motor and transmission in the car. Then there'll still be some work to do after that, but at that point it's going to be getting really close. It needs to be running by Christmas. That's the goal, is for my Christmas party. People that have been coming by the last couple of years going, so is that piece of junk ever going to move again? I can get in. Let's go for a ride. So it has to be running by Christmas. It should be pretty close by Vegas. If the motor transmission are in the car, I've still got a couple things that I'm going to have to either shorten or get a new drive shaft made for it, since the motor set back a little bit. It'll have to spend a day in the exhaust shop, but I'm waiting on some stuff to get here. Obviously, you know, the motor's got to be in the car before it can go to the exhaust shop, and I also am waiting on the mufflers and some other stuff to get here. So it's just baby steps right now. I've got to need to get the alternator mounted, need to get all that stuff done. I'm going to run a vacuum pump on it for a variety of reasons, not the least of which is the Pro Stock Racer and me thinking I could pick up 3 or 4% more horsepower.
There you
and,
go. Seat those
so
rings.
I've got that in the works, and that's going to be another, you know, bracket-building experience. So just a little baby stuff like that, but, you know, having the motor together and complete, if I really, really had to, I could throw the thing in a car and have it running by the end of the week. But it wouldn't be the way I want it. I need to get it done the way I want it. So if it was just a matter of throwing all the old motor mounts back on it, cutting a hole in the hood, I could have it running by the end of the week. But I don't want to do that. I have a plan in mind, so I'm sticking with the plan.
Stick with the plan after all this time. Get it right. I want this to be I can't wait to see the Reinhardt vision fully realized. That's going to be great.
It needs to launch with the front wheels in the air, and it needs to outrun Jason's station wagon. So those are my two main goals.
Benchmark philosophy. I love it. I love it. Alan, great job as usual. Thanks for taking the time here on WFO.
All right, Joe. We'll talk to you very soon.
Thank you very much, Alan. The NHRA's Alan Reinhardt joins us each week right here on WFO Radio. Just two races to go in the NHRA Countdown. Thank you very much to everyone who sent in questions. You can always call in your questions, 954-889-6796, or email joe@wforadio.com, or our social media pages, Twitter and Facebook. They are all up there. And have you been watching the WFO Radio social media? Have you seen the WFO Radio t-shirts are now available? They are available now, WFO t-shirts. Check out the website. If you want to rock the WFO shirt, pick one up on the WFO store on the WFO website. That's a lot of WFO, but you are certainly going to love it. Check them out. All right, on the show, Steve Reyes, Vanilla Ice, Victor Cagnazzi. We're going to talk Copo Camaros. We're going to talk Daryl Gwynn Foundation. We're going to talk rolling in my 5.0 with the rag top down so my hair can blow. And we're going to talk about, obviously, a legendary drag racing photography career. So stick with us. Get ready. WFO is coming at you. But first, I want to tell you about Frank Hawley's Drag Racing School. We have had our own WFO Radio listeners now participate in the school. Every piece of feedback that I get is positive. The idea that you could get into a dragster and race a dragster and feel the power all on your own in one day is tremendous. Pick up the phone, call 866-480-7223. Tell them you heard it here on WFO and you want to know what is best for you. The Dragster Adventure going on the 17th of October in Fontana, California. If you are out there, if you've got nothing to do, if you're looking for a great experience, if you're one of these thrill seeker types, bucket list, thinking about, well, what can I do to get the ultimate adrenaline rush? The Dragster Adventure is it. It's not a ride along. You are not in there with a driving instructor. You are not just looking around while someone else does everything else. It is exactly the opposite. You are the driver. You are strapped in. You control the race car. You feel the thrill. It's a tremendous program. Log on to Frank Hawley, HAWLEY.com, to find out more. Dates, group events, the Dragster Adventure. They do bachelor parties, work outings, team buildings. They have all kinds of different programs depending on what you want to accomplish. And that's why if you're interested, you think this might be good for me and my company, me and my friends, me and my business, pick up the phone. 866-480-7223 for Frank Hawley's Drag Racing School at frankhawley.com. We'll be back with Victor Cagnazzi, followed by Vanilla Ice, right here on WFO Radio.
This is WFO Radio.
Hey everybody, the summer is here, and that means it's time to grill. Remember just a couple of months ago when you were freezing and you were thinking, I can't wait until I can get out there and grill something? Well, now you can, and if you're going to do it, you got to do it with the most awesome barbecue rubs going. Check out Rodak's Coffee and Grills.com. Marvin Rodak, a big NHRA fan and WFO radio listener, has award-winning spice rubs that you can order online or by phone. Go to RodaxCoffeeAndGrills.com, 817-924-6821. I just tried two new hot sauces that he's got going. The perfect condiment if you're grilling out this summer. Also, coffee in the morning. Marvin roasts his own blends. You got to try them out. RodaxCoffeeAndGrills.com. Or if you want to kick it old school, pick up the phone, dial 817-924-6821. Say, hey, Marvin, I heard about you on WFO. I want you to send me some coffee and barbecue rub, maybe some hot sauce, and it'll show up in the mail. That's 817-924-6821 for RodaxCoffeeAndGrills.com.
Get fired up on the WFO line.
WFO, Joe.
954-889-6796.
It's just been an absolute joy to be a drag racing fan.
Go wide open, and your call may be used on the show.
Or preface by saying I'm not a Kurt Busch fan or apologist. I don't know where Greg Anderson's eagle is gone, but I know one person that's going to be a big-time villain in pro stock.
That's 954-889-6796. That phone line is always WFO.
Redline Synthetic Oil has been building the world's finest motor oil, gear oil, and additives, like our popular water wetter, for over 30 years. Think we're just for racers? Think again. Redline has the multi-grade viscosity available for your domestic, European, or Japanese vehicle. From 0W20 to 5W30, even 10W60, Redline motor oils are specifically designed to exceed the factory's demands, giving you longer drain intervals at lower oil temperatures. Is your off-the-shelf motor oil missing the zinc you need to protect your camshaft? Every bottle of Redline motor oil has more than enough zinc to suit your engine's needs. The same ester-based stocks found in Redline motor oil are also in our gear oils for manual transmissions and differentials. Known around the globe as the best in protection, regardless of price. Check us out at redlineoil.com to find a dealer, or even buy online. Racing technology engineered for the street. That's Redline Oil.
The stars of drag racing. WFO Radio, NHRA Nitro.
U.S. Army Top Fuel driver Tony Schumacher.
You want to see a battle. You know, you want to see gladiator stuff. And you know, at the end, someone wins and someone loses. That's what we show up for, you know. And every now and then, a car's upside down on fire. That's kind of cool, too. But, you know, as long as it ain't my car, by the way. But it's life, you know, and people want to see that intense bottom of the ninth, bases loaded, full count moment. And every race is like that now. It's just the best. It's the best Top Fuel season I've seen in a long time.
NHRA Nitro is available on demand at WFOradio.com. Now, back to WFO Radio, NHRA Nitro.
NHRA Nitro here on WFO Radio. And the countdown, the next race of the countdown is in Vegas, baby, Vegas. But that's a couple of weeks away. Think about it. It's a little bit further away than I would like, but it is going to give us an opportunity to go back and take care of some business that we had out there. I'll give you an example. I always ask the audience to send me their email requests of who they would like on the show. I got one 2 weeks ago. Hey, Joe. I'm just paraphrasing now. Hey, Joe. Why don't you get Victor Cagnazzi on to talk about the COPO program after the Chevrolet Performance U.S. Nationals? That seems to deserve more attention. And that is something we can do. Joining us on the phone line from Mooresville, North Carolina and Gray Motorsports, he's the managing director, Victor Cagnazzi, joins us now. Victor, welcome back to WFO.
Thank you, Joe. Thanks for having me.
The COPO program is drawing a lot of excited people to it. It's got to be pretty cool to be working with something that's so hot.
It is. I'm really enjoying it, Joe, a lot. And I think we can not just call it the COPO program, but I think it's really the entire factory support program, whether it's Chevrolet with the COPO, whether it's the Dodge guys or the Ford guys with the Mustang crew. I think the resurgence of the factory participation on a grassroots level is really kind of exciting, not just for me, but I know for a lot of folks. The COPO program specifically, which since we are a Chevrolet racing team, that's close to our heart.
For people who have seen you out there, obviously in the pits, at the races, supporting pro stock, maybe they don't know your full background. Let's catch them up to speed really quickly. Obviously, you're a businessman. You had some great success in business regarding the internet. And then got involved in pro stock truck, competition eliminator. Anything before that we need to cover? Give me a quick background.
Well, I'm actually still involved with technology. We have a number of different technology businesses that we're continuing to evolve. But really the main focus for the past couple of years, last 10 years, has been racing. I drove myself for a long time up until the end of the pro stock truck class when I did get out of the seat and we started kind of full-time on trying to develop a pro stock program, which has evolved into a pretty stout program that we have here at Gray. Always been a racer at heart. Always had been drag racing some type of vehicle since I was about 17 years old. Started back out in a little dragway out in Long Island called National Speedway. And anybody that's raced in the Northeast, I think they're pretty familiar with that racetrack. And actually probably spent most of my racing career at Englishtown Raceway Park, so I'm very, very familiar with that track.
Now, right now, Gray Motorsports is looking really strong in terms of pro stock, winning the U.S. Nationals, the Chevrolet Performance U.S. Nationals, and going on a run. You are a big part of that. I do want to talk about that, but our emailer wanted to focus in on the COPO program, and I got such a great opportunity. You gave me a personalized tour of a couple of your cars at the Chevrolet Performance U.S. Nationals. My eyes rolling back into my head, only wishing this the kind of thing that the audience would like. You've got a little fleet of these cars in various forms coming out of your shops.
Yeah, Gray Motorsports, we're currently campaigning, actually, three full-time, and we have another one. So we have a total of four in our inventory. And each one of them is kind of different. The one that I just started driving at Reading, that's a naturally aspirated 427 cubic inch car with a stick shift. It's one of the only ones out there right now competing in the factory shootout class. The one that Dave Connolly's been driving is a similar 427 factory shootout configuration with an automatic transmission. We have a B-stock automatic car which is a 350 naturally aspirated with an automatic that Jeff Strickland is driving. In fact, he almost got into the final this past weekend in Gainesville at the points race there. We're real proud of him. He was able to get down to the final three. He had a bye. The last one is one that Craig Hankinson drove at Indy, and that's a 350 supercharged car, which is in the factory shootout supercharged class.
I find it interesting that you decided, we talked about how you got out of the pro stock truck, but when you get back into a race car, you want to get into a stick shift car, Victor.
John, that's all I've ever driven. It's even when I bracket raced, I always had a manual transmission. In fact, I only really drove an automatic transmission car, I think, two times down the track. We had converted a C-altered that I had to an automatic car, and it just... It's not that I think there's anything wrong with them. It's just that my skill is with the stick shift, and when I get into an automatic, for people that drive them that think they're simple, to me it's just, I don't know, it's just confusing.
Yeah, the brain doesn't know what to do. With the simplicity, and
Absolutely.
You went toe to toe against Dave in Maple Grove. To me, that had to be a lot of fun for the team. What about you? Dave's clearly, everybody knows, one of the best drivers out there on the planet and anything. He can win a bracket race. He can win a pro stock race. He can win anything. And here you are jumping back into the seat, and all of a sudden you got to run Dave, and you beat him.
Well, I had to run Dave in the second round of the factory shootout, Joe, and I'd love to say, but I'd be lying, I'd love to say that, you know, I knew it was Dave in the other lane, and I was after him, and I was got up on the wheel, I did all those things. But the fact of the matter is, that first race back at Reading, I was doing everything I could to try to do everything right. And I did know Dave was in the other lane, but it didn't change what I was doing. It was fun to beat him. The way the stick shift car works compared to the automatic car, he did, although I had a slightly better reaction time than him, he was out on me quite a ways at the 300-foot mark, and the stick shift car kind of accelerates after that point. So chasing him down and beating him over the finish line was pretty exciting. And I'm having so much fun driving the car. It's incredible. I can't even describe to you how much fun the car is to drive. I can feel so much in it compared to even my pro stock truck.
Really?
Oh, my gosh. It leaves the starting line with the wheels in the air, and it's just fun.
The back tires squish flat.
Yeah, practically.
Practically. I don't know. How much pressure are you running in those things?
We're running 12 in ours.
Okay.
I mean, but you got to realize the car's 3,350 pounds.
Yeah.
Did you see that online video?
No.
Oh, you're kidding. Uh-huh. You have an internet connection?
Right, Andy? Now I do. Tell me where to go.
Yeah, actually, it's the first one that comes up. Type Cagnazzi Racing Copo YouTube. This will give you an idea of what I experienced in the car. Put up the volume. The
volume is up. We are waiting for it to load. All right. Wow, that is awesome, Victor.
Isn't that fun?
Yes. What's better than that? You're banging the gears in there. You're pointed at the sky. I have driven a car that did a big wheel stand one time, and
yeah.
It was super. It was not my car. It was like a last second. I had to jump in it to get bracket points, and so I made the best of my situation. But that looks like it's so much fun once you're used to what's about to happen.
Yes. Yeah, it is. I mean, it's just, that's a blast. I'm having a ball driving it.
Wow. Well, when are you driving it next?
Vegas.
Vegas, baby.
Yeah, in fact, I'm leaving. We're leaving Sunday. There's a pro stock test session out there Monday, Tuesday, and I'm going to bring it along and just do some testing Monday, Tuesday. They're having the factory shootout race at Vegas. It's the last one of the season.
Very, very cool. You had a 002 reaction time as well. I'll drop that in.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're very welcome. I thought it was very cool, and I think this level of excitement is building. What are you receiving when you're out there? You're walking the pits. The fans are coming by. You have lived the birth and death of different classes. You've seen things get a certain level of excitement and then go to the next level. How would you gauge this factory support program that we are seeing and its viability and the people who are fans and also people who are participants, how they are accepting it?
Let's talk about fans first, Joe, because that's extremely important. And sportsman cars of all types, whether it's stock eliminator, super stock, competition eliminator, even the alcohol dragsters and funny cars, all of them are diehard racers. They're there to race. The fans are, I don't want to say the fans are not important to them, but they're there to race, and they're there to do a job and try to win. And sometimes we see fans come into the sportsman pit area, sometimes we don't. At Indy, specifically, and at the Reading race, the amount of attention that we're getting from fans on these factory shootout cars is just incredible. I've been actually blown away by how many people come back into the pit areas, which, you know, Joe, where the sportsman pit areas are, sometimes they're a little bit off the beaten path, come back to try to find these cars and look at them. Now, we keep an open pit area around the factory shootout cars. Anybody can come and look at them. The hoods are up. They can look at the engines. They can stick their head in the car, because these are really stock cars. And the amount of interest that they have and the amount of questions, very intelligent questions that they ask, I am actually blown away at how educated they are just in the class alone, the people that do come back. And then when they hear that this is a car that actually they could purchase from a dealer, the questions just increase to the point where we're almost giving them
the phone number of our sponsor, Berger, to here. You can go order it here. So that part's been really, really exciting from the fan standpoint. At Reading, when we talk about competitors in different sportsman classes, we had a tremendous amount of attention from folks from the competition eliminator ranks. Probably four or five different folks came up and looked at the cars closely, questioned how the class worked and kind of how the cars worked. And a couple of them actually did speak to Roger Allen at General Motors about getting them. I think they're looking at this as maybe an alternative to competition eliminator, as something they can do that's fun. It's like a mini pro stock because it's heads up. There's no breakout. There's no horsepower factoring. There's nothing. Just the first guy to the finish line wins, and I think that's exciting for a lot of folks.
Oh, it's exciting. It's exciting for me to watch, and something that I have been thinking about, not that I'm always right or wrong, but relevance to what can be purchased in the showroom, to me, is so important. We saw NASCAR, obviously they're the number one motorsport in America, go through a period where they lost their way with the Car of Tomorrow. It was just a shape with stickers. People lost interest. They rectified the situation. Now they are once again relevant, and I think reaping some benefits of it. The fact that that Copa Camaro you drive looks just like the 307 horsepower six-cylinder that somebody can go out and buy and at least feel like, man, this is what it looks like to be in a Copa Camaro and I'm cruising up in it. There's got to be value to that.
Well, yeah, there isn't. When people look inside and look at the interior and they see it's got a full dashboard and seats and carpeting, Joe, I can't tell you how many times I chuckle to myself when I'm getting ready to pull into the water box and I put the windows up, their power windows, and it just kills me. I'm in a race car. It cracks me up that I'm in a race car that has power windows and they actually go up. So, I mean, it's all those little things that I think are very, very intriguing. I mean, the hood latch is in the same spot. There's no hood pins. I mean, it's a factory car. I mean, the trunk release even works. When I hit the trunk button, you know, inside on the door panel, the trunk pops open.
Now, what are the combinations for our listeners out there? Victor Cagnazzi is joining us. He is the managing director of Gray Motorsports, the Pro Stock side, and, of course, the Copo program. There are a couple of combinations that are available. Let's say someone wanted to buy one. They have some choices.
Well, first of all, the Copo car itself, the Copo race program, the folks at Chevrolet have done a fantastic job of analyzing the classes that are out there. This car can be assembled from part numbers at Chevrolet to do anything from being an 11-second car to a low 8-second car. So there are all configurations of almost any kind of stock eliminator or super stock class you want to go into, and they have the specific formula and menu for that. So if we were to take a car like Jeff Strickland is driving, for example, that's a three-speed automatic car with a just a regular 350. I think it's rated 500 horsepower. And that car will go 1020s or 1030s at 125, 130 miles an hour. So that's a really nice entry-level car for somebody that wants to get into stock eliminator. They don't have to have a tremendous amount of experience to be able to run it. They can climb in. The fuel maps and everything are already in the fuel injection from General Motors. They basically climb in. They can go to a Frank Hawley or they can go to any of the other schools, get some training, and they can go to a divisional race and compete in a stock eliminator car. And I think that's what's really cool about it, that they don't have to assemble a whole team around them. They don't have to build everything themselves that they don't want. They can actually just go buy it and jump in it.
That sounds tremendous. There are some supercharged combinations as well, which are obviously much quicker.
Very much quicker. There's a 350 4-liter supercharged car. That's one of the ones that's the car that Craig Hankinson drove at the U.S. Nationals, and that's the one Bruno Mazel actually won the U.S. Nationals in the stock eliminator with. I mean, that's a car that will go in the bad atmosphere of Indy, 860 at 160 miles an hour. So again, that's the other side of the equation. And this is a stock eliminator car with 8-inch drag slicks on the back, leaves with the front wheels 2 feet in the air, and it's a really exciting ride. That car, the supercharged car, and a version of the 427 engine, which is naturally aspirated, are the two primary engines for the factory shootout, which is that heads-up class that I was telling you about.
No, I think it is great. Of course, the Challengers are out there and the Cobra Jets, and they have a little bit of a head start. Do you see parity being achieved? Do you feel it has already been achieved? Is it just a matter of time once... Now that the Copos are out, it has been out the least amount of time of those big three. Are we closing in on an area where you feel like everything is level and it's just about racing?
I think we're there. I think we're getting very, very close. I mean, the Ford program has been very well established for quite a few years longer than the Chevrolet program. But I think if you look at how we're starting to qualify the Chevrolet cars, I think that we're getting very, very close. The Dodge and the naturally aspirated factory shootout car that David Barton is driving, I mean, he's doing tremendously with it. If we look at the speeds and things that we're running, I think we can pretty much see that horsepower-wise, we're probably all about the same. How the cars are being run is a little bit different, and I think that's where probably all of us on the Chevrolet side just need to continue to pick away. I mean, no matter what they give us, we still have to get the car from A to B in the quickest fashion, and I think that's where we're starting to see our jumps and leaps and bounds in getting those cars to accelerate.
Do you see, as someone who is a fan of drag racing in particular, is there a downside to any of this? Because I'm noticing some of the classic cars. How about this? Who doesn't like to go get a brand new race car with power windows? And if I had been running a stocker for the past 15 years that I had invested blood, sweat, and tears in building myself, and then all of a sudden I can buy this, I might decide to upgrade. Will this eventually cause those old school stockers to become a thing of the past?
You know, I don't think so. I think there's a place for those also, because they're our heritage. NHRA is based on heritage, as you know, Joe. And those 69 Camaros and those 66 Novas and the 66 Mustangs and all the other cars out there, they're part of a performance heritage back from the muscle car days. I think there's a place for both of those cars. I think there's a, because again, the people that come to see them, they like looking at a 69 Camaro as much as they like looking at a 2014 Camaro. I think what it does offer, though, as some, for especially for the guy that has a 69 Camaro, maybe it's something he wants to now, since he's been racing it for a while, put it aside, maybe turn it into a collector piece. Well, Chevrolet also has a program, Joe, where they can buy a roller car. They don't even have to buy a complete car. They can buy a complete Copo rolling chassis that really has everything they need to go racing except an engine, a transmission, a drive shaft, and a center section. So they can basically build their own power plant and put their own drivetrain in it and kind of still get that working on it accomplishment feel and the accomplishment that goes along with that and put it into a new style body.
It's kind of shocking to think that this is a factory car, that you're ordering it from General Motors. We often hear about, I'm 41 years old, so I heard about the muscle car era, but I was born after it, and I grew up in maybe the weakest period of American cars, the late 70s, early to mid 80s, although many of them have turned into some very cool stock eliminator cars and super stockers. But the idea that you can go to a dealership or the central office production order, which I understand is the acronym for COPO, and these are genuine Chevrolets that the people, the stock, General Motors, they have sought and found profit motive in building race cars.
Yep, absolutely. And one of the neat things about it, they really put a lot of engineering, and I know Ford and Chrysler do as well, but I know Chevrolet puts a tremendous amount of engineering in every part that goes in that car. And one of the things that is important to them is that car is going to go up and down the track 200 or 300 times without you even having to take it apart. And, I mean, that kind of longevity in a race car is you don't get that very often. So I think what we're seeing is that a lot of the things, when you look at where it can evolve to, while the cost can if you look at the current purchase cost opposed to the cost of operation, if you look at how many runs you can get out of it, I mean, I think Jeff Strickland has probably got 125 or 130 runs on that engine that's in the car he's racing right now, and it's still, everything's great.
Wow, that is tremendous. What about Victor?
You don't even take the valve covers off.
Really?
Really.
See, what I think about it, I think about this, the gentleman racer, the club racer who goes and gets a Porsche 911 and goes out to his track days, and he feels like, you know, I'm tackling the corners in his Porsche 911. This feels like the drag racing version of that, the American version of that, because drag racing is such an American thing. The idea of you buy it, not a lot of work and effort, you go out, you race it, you have fun, you enjoy it, as opposed to having to build this whole thing, and it's pretty much turnkey, ready to go. Do you get that sense? Is this the American version of what those club racers are doing?
Oh, absolutely it is. In fact, there are a number of folks that are racing them right now that would be that typical club racer. I mean, there are some very, very successful business folks. One of our customers at Gray Motorsports, Joseph Welch, he runs an extremely large corporation up in Michigan, and he's been a diehard race fan and racer. He raced back in the pro stock days in the 70s, the beginnings of it. And when this came back out, he jumped right back in. He's somebody. He's one of those guys that you brought back out of the woodwork with this car.
Very interesting. Victor, I appreciate you going in detail. I got to ask you about 500-inch pro stock. You guys have currently third, fourth, and seventh in the point standings. Dave, 51 points out of the lead. Shane, 99 points out of the lead. With two races remaining, a little bit of a break in the action here that we have in 2014. That break will be cut down in 2015 due to the schedule. But what is happening at Gray Motorsports to try to put your guys in the best position possible to gain this championship?
Well, back in the Gray Motorsports engine shop, I mean, they've been looking for this break to come. I mean, we just came through four races in a row. And like everybody, Joe, I don't want to just say it's us. I'm sure everybody's doing the same thing. There are things you've been working on all year. Some things that we introduced right before the countdown started that I think have you've seen in our performance. Other things that we've been working on throughout that we didn't have implemented that we're going to have implemented going into Las Vegas. I think like everyone, this is probably, we'll say the same thing, and we'll say that this is probably one of the toughest, closest years that it's been in pro stock in a real, real long time. I mean, anyone of the top five or six out there could win this championship. And all of us at Gray Motorsports are focused, I mean, we're laser focused on making sure that every time any one of those cars goes up to the starting line, I mean, Justin Elks has done an incredible job of making those cars go A to B as quick as possible. I mean, I'm excited about what's going to happen in the next two races. I think, you know, based on the folks that we have there, we've won combined six world championships if you look at all the personnel. So we certainly have the folks at Gray to be able to accomplish it. Now we just have to put our heads down and drive forward for that prize.
Well, you got the right guys behind the wheel as well. Okay. Jonathan has done such a great job, Shane, winning the Chevrolet Performance U.S. Nationals, and Dave is Dave. We don't even need to go into detail. But let me ask you, Victor,
sure.
A conversation piece that is out there. You probably have maybe the most unique and up-close perspective of this. 500 cubic inch pro stock. Some people say it has evolved beyond its I don't want to say usefulness, but it has evolved to a point where the cars are almost impractical. They're so efficient and based on efficiency, and you're wringing tenths of horsepower out of everything, and that these Copo cars perhaps should be a better representation of what pro stock could be. Some people are saying the like the Candies and Hughes Cobra Jet Super Stocker should be what pro stock is. For the first time in a long time, there is question about what should pro stock be? As someone who has experience with both, up close and personal, do you have an opinion on that?
I think pro stock has to evolve like it has over years. I think that to say that it's, I mean, I've heard people say that it's dead or that it's evolved to a point where it's not practical, just like what you said. But if we look at any kind of racing, Joe, I think all types of racing evolve to that point. And between the competitors and the sanctioning bodies, we have to take a hard look at that and say, okay, what do we need to do with this class to, A, increase participation with more competitors, B, keep the fans excited and enticed into wanting to continue to have their favorite drivers and root for their favorite pro stock teams. And I think the last thing is that they have to be something that, again, is something that a young person can aspire to be. That one day they want to say, like I did when I was a kid, man, one day I watched Bill Jenkins and said, you know, I want to drive a pro stock car one day. I want to be that guy. And I think it's put all those things together, and I think that's what we have to look at and say, how do we make pro stock hit all those marks so that we can, A, keep the fans interested in it, B, bring more competitors into the class, and C, have those young folks that want to continue to carry that banner forward. It's extremely expensive to do. Gray Motorsports, like anyone, has invested a tremendous amount of money over the years to make ourselves competitive. Do we look at it and say that it's too expensive? I don't know. Do we look at it and say it's gone too far away from what the original concept was? I don't know. Looking at the Copo cars and looking at the Pro Stock cars, I think a combination of both those things could be what the next generation could be. What that is yet, I don't know. I think we all have to kind of put our heads together and figure out what makes the most sense.
I would agree. And yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how it all shakes out.
It's going to. I mean, it's going to shake out like anything. I mean, and I'm excited to see where it could be. I mean, would it be cool to have cars that look like the ones that were running the factory shootout out there going mid-6 seconds at 200 miles an hour? I think that would be a heck of a ride. I think it would be exciting to watch. It's going to put a lot of driving. If it evolves to that, it's going to put a lot of driving into the seat because, you know, just like watching those 10-5 cars, they're a lot to handle.
And people like it. It's a shame, but that's part of what makes the sport what it is. We like seeing unpredictability.
Does.
It's like, what's going to happen?
Yeah.
You know, at this most recent race out there in Maple Grove, Arnie Martel had his competition eliminator, 2015 Camaro, sitting right behind what many people believe to be the first ever Camaro race car, which is built basically out of a factory body. And you could really see how one represented the showroom perfectly and was still a very quick race car, and the other was a close representation.
When you're talking about the current Pro Stock being a close representation.
Yes.
Yeah.
No, well, the current Pro Stock versions being a loosely based representation, you know, high hood up on the windshield, very swoopy, still close but difficult to identify compared to a Copo or something that is true stock specs.
Yeah, it's interesting. I don't know where the balance is. I think they still have to be fast. I mean, people have said, oh, why don't they just turn factory shootout into Pro Stock? And I don't think they're fast enough to really excite all of the fans. But I think there is a cross. I agree with you. I think there's something where it can look similar to what it is. And maybe it starts off as just the early days of Pro Stock where there are multiple engine configurations that are in that type of body that begin to evolve. I mean, you think back of the Buddy Ingersoll days. I mean, think what he did with a turbocharged V6 when he was running in the Pro Stock class. I mean, that was pretty interesting.
I think you're all over it there in that when you go to the factory, you get fuel injection. They come with power adders. They come with these things now from the factory, which makes them stock. And so they are okay in Pro Stock. Although that goes against, you know, years of history. And there are the purists, by all means, and they have a very genuine and legitimate argument as well. That's what's so tough about it. It's going to be interesting to see how it shakes out.
Yeah, well, I think we'll see a lot between now and the end of the year. I think there's a lot of ideas being, you know, bantered back and forth. I'd be curious to see what everybody thinks is the next logical step.
I love getting the kids involved, the kids
I
with their
too.
Computers. I think the computers, computer programming, every tech school is teaching these kids about fuel injection and mapping and all that, and where can they put that to good use? I think that would be a perfect idea. I like that.
I do, too. I think it absolutely is.
Victor, thank you very much for coming on WFO Radio. This has been a great conversation. Hopefully the listeners that emailed in are satisfied with it. I think that they probably will be.
I hope they will be, too, Joe, and I hope that we have a real nice conversation at the end of the season, because one of the Gray Motorsports drivers took home that Pro Stock Championship.
Well, you guys control your own destiny there. It is a great battle. What is funny, just a final period on this, is that we talk about the death of Pro Stock, and yet we are experiencing maybe the most exciting points season that we have ever seen with Jason Lyne and Erica and Dave and Shane, and everyone is in it. It is a level playing field. It has been wildly exciting so far. Very resurgent for the category, so it's kind of interesting that these conversations are happening while we are having a great season, but it's very interesting. Good luck. Thank you so much. You are definitely invited back to talk big things if they should work out. Good luck to you.
Thank you, Joe. Have a good day.
Victor Cagnazzi with us here on WFO Radio, and a big thanks to the WFO Radio listener who sent in that suggestion on the WFO Radio email, joe@wforadio.com. He suggested Victor, and he got him just like that. send me the suggestions, and maybe we'll make it happen just like that. Now, coming up on the show, we have got Vanilla Ice, and we have got Steve Reyes. So stick around. We're also going to talk about the Division II Gainesville results a little more in depth. The WFO T-shirts, they are flying off the shelves. I will tell you the story, the behind the scenes of how it all went down and things you need to know if you're going to get one, especially if you're 2X. There's a little secret going on that I will reveal on WFO just minutes from now. How cool was it listening to the YouTube video with Victor? Him talking about his role in the car, what it's like for him. And we get to hear it. Very, very cool. Thanks to Victor Cagnazzi and the folks from Gray Motorsports for coming on the show. Now I want to tell you about RodaxCoffeeAndGrills.com. Open a browser and either go to WFOradio.com and click that banner ad, or go to RodaxCoffeeAndGrills.com. Marvin Rodak, who started our show off with like a little smack talk back and forth between Jason Lyon and Alan Reinhart trying to get something going. I respect that. I think that's what it's all about, getting something going among racers, two guys with cool cars. Let's see him race. Let's see him race. Who knows what'll happen? Let's see him race. But Marvin is actually an expert in a couple of different things. One is barbecue. The other is the roasting of unique coffees. And he has created a special blend for WFO Radio called WFO Radio Special Blend. He also does an espresso called Bang the Blower. We met Marvin out there at Dallas at Billy Meyer's Texas Motorplex, and he kind of explained his whole philosophy of coffee and whatnot. I got to speak with the Money Man, who is a personality on our show, and he says that he is already ready to make his third order, second order, from Rodax. Why? They have over 40 single original coffees to choose from, plus special custom blends like WFO Radio and Bang the Blower. They are all specially grade coffee that represents the top 5% of coffee grown in the world, on the earth. All the coffee is roasted fresh per your order, so it's not sitting there already roasted. It's waiting for you to order, and then it will be roasted. They have limited edition. They have seasonal. They have rare micro lots of coffee that they buy farm direct from the grower, and some farms produce less than 10 sacks a year of the unique coffees. They've got five exotic coffees from Jamaica, Sumatra Kopi Luwak, Panama Geisha, Australia, Puerto Rico, and from Hawaii, the Kona and Maui coffees. What you got to do is go on the website. The coffees are out of this world, a great way to start your day. Of course, the WFO Radio blend says you want to support WFO Radio, you like the show, you are a WFO listener. I got to say, the hot sauces are fantastic. I cannot explain how great they are. In fact, I gave Giovanni in Miami, my producer on the program, a bottle last week. The bottle is now missing. He claims that he's keeping it somewhere, but I think it's already been totally consumed. I think he lost all self-control. Get on the website. Check out the barbecue spice rubs, the A26 rub, the habanero endorphin booster hot sauce, the best thing you got going, and of course, the WFO Radio blend, or maybe your favorite custom blend of coffee. Check it out. He's a big supporter of WFO Radio. You will love it. That's RodaxCoffeeAndGrills.com. Vanilla Ice is next.
This is WFO Radio.
Frank Hawley's Drag Racing School. Whether you're a bracket racer who wants to get better or a thrill seeker looking to cross it off your bucket list, Frank Hawley's Drag Racing School can put you on the right track. Don't believe me? Tell him, Frank.
No matter how little or how much experience you have, we've got a program for you. So if driving a dragster is on your bucket list, there's no better time than now. And if you'd like to be a pro, well, here's the newest funny car champ, Jack Beckman.
Hey, this is Jack Beckman. Long before I was Fast Jack, I was a bracket racer who went to the Frank Hawley School. The time I spent there was some of the most exciting, intense, and fulfilling moments ever in a race car. I feel the curriculum Frank developed greatly helped me win not only the Super Comp, but also the NHRA Nitro Funny Car Championship. Frank put me on the right track. What are you waiting for?
Call them at 866-480-7223. That's 866-480-7223, or visit frankhawley.com.
Android and iPhone users, download the WFO Radio app. It's sports radio for racing fans.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
The ultimate racing show, including WFO Radio NHRA Nitro, WFO Radio Ignition, the WFO Radio NASCAR Tailgate Party, news, videos, push notifications, and more.
I just hope I'm part of it.
Go to the App Store or Android Market. Search WFO Radio and download it now.
Now. Hey, this is Joe Costello, and we'll be back to the show in a second. But first, I want to tell you about CompetitionPlus.com. There's a reason CompetitionPlus.com is the leader among drag racing electronic magazines. Their trained staff is always on alert and always asking the tough questions. The end result is hard-hitting drag racing journalism with up-to-the-minute reporting. For over a decade, CompetitionPlus.com has been a pioneer as drag racing's go-to source for the latest in news, race coverage, and high-quality photography. Their trained staff thrives on getting the inside stories, and their columnists study their topics before they hit their first keystroke. When it comes to covering the races, they leave you feeling as if you've actually been to the race. CompetitionPlus.com is an honest-to-goodness, free drag racing magazine, published by the most passionate of drag racing fans, who just happen to be journalists. Don't wonder what's going on in the drag racing world. Be in the know daily. Log on to CompetitionPlus.com.
The one, the only, WFO Radio, NHRA Nitro.
You gotta keep on keeping on. It's top fuel drag racing going 330 miles an hour. You never know what can happen, so hang on and we're having fun.
WFORadio.com. Now, back to WFO Radio, NHRA Nitro.
Welcome back to WFO Radio. This past weekend at the Hard Rock Hotel and Casino, the Daryl Gwynn Foundation had a white party, a huge event. Guess who was there?
Yo, VIP.
That's right, Vanilla Ice. He did the show. He sung Ice Ice Baby. He was there for the foundation. Check out DarylGwynnFoundation.org. Let's hear how it went.
WFO Radio at the Hard Rock Casino in Hollywood, Florida, with Robert Van Winkle, a.k.a. Vanilla Ice, the Daryl Gwynn Foundation. Vanilla Ice, how did you get hooked up with Daryl Gwynn?
Well, first of all, he's a legend, and I'm a huge fan. I watched him race when I was a teenager at Texas Motorplex Speedway there. I think it was going against Eddie Hill, and my chest plate was rattling. I loved it. It was such an intense moment. I loved smelling, you know, the race fuel and the burning rubber and all that. I just loved the entire thing, right? And when he asked me to be a part of this event, he understands the importance, but it's not somebody that is in a wheelchair that it takes to understand how important it is for a wheelchair to really help people who are in this situation. And, I mean, it's their legs, it's their life, it's their mobility. And I'm honored to come out here with Daryl and raise money to help out, because the evolution of the wheelchair has really come a long way. I mean, really, like computers, they evolve. These chairs have evolved. Now they have special, you know, things that they can stand up, so they work the joints and the muscles, and they get to live longer. They have, you know, for people who can't use their hands, now they can, you know, use the headpiece that will get them around and give them more mobility. So I love to see a lot of people here in South Florida, where I'm honored to that I live, but there's a lot of wealthy people here, and they have come out, and they do help out, and that's a great thing, and that makes where we live here in South Florida even that much better. And who doesn't love the smell of races, you know, and the cars and all that? I met Daryl.
Tell me about the Motorplex.
The Motorplex was awesome.
Billy Myers, Texas Motorplex. I was just there with NHRA a few weeks ago. How do you, when was this? When did it happen? I want to hear the story, because obviously you lived the dream. You had a superstar. I was watching the Ice Ice Baby on Video Jukebox as a kid in my senior year. You're at the Motorplex. Tell me that story.
I did Ice Ice Baby when I was 16 years old. Before that, I was 14. I used to break dance. I heard that the race was coming to town. I wasn't going to miss it. I always loved cars. That's why I put the Roland in my 5.0 in the video. So I was a drag racer, racing all the time, you know, putting 355 rear end, go to a 411, forged piston, steel crank, man. I breathe it. I'm one of those octane guys. And, you know, Daryl and I share that same blood, you know what I mean? It runs through your blood and it never goes out. It's in your veins for life. And it's a great thrill, but it's also very entertaining. And I went to Texas Motorplex and watched him and my legends, and Big Daddy and Eddie Hill, and I'm trying to remember everybody who was there. John Force. Oh my gosh, I can go down a list. I'm trying to remember everybody.
When you say Eddie Hill, you got credibility.
I might go old school on you there a little bit, but those are legends of the sport. And, you know, from Bernstein to all the top dogs out there today, and there's a lot of new talent out there, and they are going fast, man. And
do you still keep up with the sport of NHRA drag racing?
I love drag racing, man. And if you've never been to an event, you got to get out and see one, because seeing it on TV is cool, but watching it in person is even cooler, because you feel it, you smell that. You know, alcohol burning, and you the rubber, and you see them take off, and your chest plate rattles. It's just such a, you know, force going down the track. It's amazing how awesome it is.
GerylGuinFoundation.org is where to go, folks. Let me tell you a story. My first announcing job was at Miami Hollywood Motorsports Park out in by the Sportatorium.
That's right.
And one night I'm calling the action. I'm 18. I'm 41. How old are you?
Yeah, 29.
Okay, you're 29.
Like
I'm 41. Yeah, older.
We're both 29. You mean
getting old sucks, man. It's a bummer.
I've been old.
Yes. Bottom line, I get a radio up. Somebody says, hey, this dude in this GMC Typhoon that has the Grand National turbocharged six-cylinder is, I think it's Vanilla Ice. Was that, in fact, you?
That was. That thing, it did a high nines. I had four turbos, 1,200 horsepower. And, this thing is all-wheel drive, so, I mean, it would just fly down the track, and everybody really wasn't tuned in with what these Typhoons were all about, you know. And it was a sleeper car, so you could win and hustle really well, you know, some bracket racing and stuff like that. People didn't understand it. And I would go out there and race. I had really dark tinted windows, like you said, and didn't want anybody to know who it was. So we would go out there and just have fun, man. Drag racing and all that is it's amazing rush. And my Typhoon was great, but it ran like a bat out of hell until I blew it up.
Well, everybody with a six-cylinder Buick blew it up, so don't worry about it. What's it like to have created, it's true, an anthem for a generation? As much as Ice Ice Baby, you know, people think about it. That is a song that we, people of our age, grew up with. We saw it, we lived it, you play it, the girls move. It is an anthem for our generation, like it or not, it is. What's it like when you think about, man, you know, I did that?
Yeah, it's timeless. You know, I wrote that when I was 16. It was on a record called To the Extreme. We sold 160 million records, which is most sold hip-hop record of all time still to this day. So I'm honored, you know. And it's amazing how it took on a life of its own, and still to this day, I go out and play concerts everywhere. I'll be in Vegas tomorrow playing, and you know, the festivals and all this, and they're huge. 35,000 people come out to the block party. I mean, it's big stuff, you know. And a lot of the fans that are out there are like 16 to 25, and if you do the math, they weren't even born, but they know every word, every lyric. So I'm honored that the song has been timeless and continues on to this day. It's an anthem for here, A1A Beachfront Avenue, cruising Miami in a 5.0 back in the day with the top down. And that's what it was all about, to represent where we are and what we, you know, we're doing out here at that time. And it's amazing that people still gravitate towards it.
We're here for the Daryl Gwynn Foundation, but you have your own charity and an event coming up. Tell us about it.
It's called the Vanilla Ice Holiday Block Party on December 6th, Clematis Street, downtown Palm Beach. We decorate the whole street like Christmas. This is the ninth year we've done it. We have 35,000 people show up in attendance. We've raised over $3 million, and it helps out all the terminally ill kids in the children's hospitals. And they call it Little Smiles, because I truly believe that smiles are contagious. And if you can spread a smile, like I go in on Christmas and I give out toys to the children's hospitals. And it's an amazing thing when you walk in there, how uplifting it makes, you know, all the people in there. It's amazing, you know, and that's a random thing that I do. I put my own emotions aside and I walk in there, and it makes a big difference. And I just love doing it. And, you know, my grandpa died of Lou Gehrig's disease, so I love to see that ice bucket challenge. You know, my mom has leukemia, and she's beating it now, so she's doing good. But there's a lot of, you know, real concerns and diseases out there that people can come together and really help out and make a difference. And this is one of them that Daryl Gwynn does here, and I'm honored to be a part of it.
Bob, thank you very much for taking the time on WFO Radio. I greatly appreciate it, what you've done. Plus, I got to see Ice Ice Baby, baby.
All right, brother.
Thank you very much.
Best of both worlds. You're very welcome.
Check out the hook while DJ revolves it.
Vanilla Ice at the Daryl Gwynn Foundation White Party at the Hard Rock Hotel and Casino. You can check out DarylGwynnFoundation.org to find out more. And, of course, Ice with the programs on DIY Network. Check it out.
Yo, man, let's get out of here. Word to your mother. Ice, ice.
And if you claim that you weren't rocking out to this when you were a teenager out there in high school in the mid-90s, well, I don't know what to say. Because everybody I know was. It was outrageous. Still the highest-selling rap hit of all time. That's pretty impressive stuff. And he's a drag racing fan. Now, the story about the typhoon that we talked about, I remember that very vividly. It was at Miami Hollywood Motorsports Park. Staging lanes, open lanes. The typhoons were very cool. You remember the Cyclone, which was basically a GMC version of the S10 with the Buick Regal Grand National six-cylinder with a turbocharger in it. The Typhoon was the Jimmy version of it. It was very cool. All-wheel drive way back in the day. They were trying real hard to make them go. I think Vanilla Ice needs to be invited to an NHRA Mellow Yellow Drag Race. And what's interesting is we didn't talk a lot about his shows because we were talking about the foundation and we were just talking about what was going on there, the DarylGwynnFoundation.org. Check them out. But then I come home and I'm flipping on DIY. He is on practically round the clock. Like the DIY Vanilla Ice Project and now Vanilla Ice Goes Amish are on all the time. I think this guy needs to be out at the NHRA races. What do you think? Let me know. But very cool what he is doing through his own charity and through the Daryl Gwynn Foundation. How about it, folks? All right, moving on. Some cool things happening in the world of the NHRA. For instance, Division II from Auto Plus Raceway at Gainesville. The Lucas Oil Drag Racing Series. Dwayne Shields winning in top alcohol dragster Matt Gill. Taking out Dan Pomponio in the final round of Alcohol Funny Car. Gotta say, seeing Danny with that WFO radio sticker for the entirety of the 2014 Top Alcohol Funny Car season was pretty cool. I got to say a big thanks to the Pomponio family for getting a lot of pub and cred for the show. People see that. They say, what's WFO? They click on WFO. They hear WFO. They listen to WFO. And then maybe they buy a WFO radio t-shirt, which is now on sale. If you go to WFOradio.com, you will see a story right there on the front page. It has been a labor, but we got it. All right, here's the secret I was going to tell you, though. We got Steve Reyes waiting in the green room, waiting to come up, talk about his CompetitionPlus.com story, a Legends series, lots of great information about to come at you. But when it comes to the WFO Radio t-shirts, here's what I will say. Limited stock. Limited stock at first. If you are 2X, because the biggest we've got is 2X. If you are 2X, I would make a move ASAP, like quick, because there are not a lot of them. If you are small or medium, same deal, not a lot of them. If you are large or extra large, like many people out there, we've got you more covered. And that's just the way it is as we delve into WFO gear. There are photographs on the website you can check out. The t-shirt in action. Hopefully you like it. Hopefully if you love the show, you will get one. And then we can make our next order and get more. People are asking about black. People are asking about children's sizes. People are asking about sweatshirts. People are asking about beer koozies. People are asking about keychains. We can do that. We've got WFO Radio keychains, bottle opener, keychain, Christmas ornament. It acts as all of the above. When you make your order, check that out. And the Made in America WFO Radio hats are coming soon. But right now, if you want a WFO Radio t-shirt, get on the website, WFOradio.com. Get yourself one before they are gone. And the way they were moving today, that could happen at any time. Make a move, baby. Big thanks to Vanilla Ice, Robert Van Winkle, for coming on WFO Radio. And a big thanks to the Daryl Gwynn Foundation for inviting us to the White Party. All right, when we come back, we're going to get into it with Steve Reyes, CompetitionPlus.com. You can check out the piece and then listen to the interview or vice versa. But it is great stuff. If you are a photographer, if you are a young person, if you are chasing your dreams, you're not going to want to miss this. Steve Reyes coming up next right here on WFO Radio.
This is WFO Radio.
Hey everybody, the summer is here, and that means it's time to grill. Remember just a couple of months ago when you were freezing and you were thinking, I can't wait until I can get out there and grill something? Well, now you can, and if you're going to do it, you got to do it with the most awesome barbecue rubs going. Check out Rodax Coffee and Grills.com Marvin Rodak, a big NHRA fan and WFO radio listener, has award-winning spice rubs that you can order online or by phone. Go to RodaksCoffeeAndGrills.com, 817-924-6821. I just tried two new hot sauces that he's got going. The perfect condiment if you're grilling out this summer. Also, coffee in the morning. Marvin roasts his own blends. You got to try them out. RodaksCoffeeAndGrills.com. Or if you want to kick it old school, pick up the phone, dial 817-924-6821. Say, hey, Marvin, I heard about you on WFO. I want you to send me some coffee and barbecue rub, maybe some hot sauce, and it'll show up in the mail. That's 817-924-6821 for RodaksCoffeeAndGrills.com.
Get fired up on the WFO line.
WFO, Joe.
954-889-6796.
It's just been an absolute joy to be a drag racing fan.
Go wide open, and your call may be used on the show.
Or preface by saying I'm not a Kurt Busch fan or apologist. I don't know where Greg Anderson's ego is gone, but I know one person that's going to be a big-time villain in pro stock.
That's 954-889-6796. That phone line is always WFO.
Frank Hawley's Drag Racing School. Whether you're a bracket racer who wants to get better or a thrill seeker looking to cross it off your bucket list, Frank Hawley's Drag Racing School can put you on the right track. Don't believe me? Tell him, Frank.
No matter how little or how much experience you have, we've got a program for you. So if driving a dragster is on your bucket list, there's no better time than now. And if you'd like to be a pro, well, here's the newest funny car champ, Jack Beckman.
Hey, this is Jack Beckman. Long before I was Fast Jack, I was a bracket racer who went to the Frank Hawley School. The time I spent there was some of the most exciting, intense, and fulfilling moments ever in a race car. I feel the curriculum Frank developed greatly helped me win not only the Super Comp, but also the NHRA Nitro Funny Car Championship. Frank put me on the right track. What are you waiting for?
Call them at 866-480-7223. That's 866-480-7223. Or visit frankhawley.com.
The stars of drag racing. WFO Radio, NHRA Nitro.
Erica Ender-Stevens, I know your personal history to become the 99th different win for a female. It had to be absolutely huge. Tell us about it.
I've been out there fighting it since I was 8 years old, and it's just been a blessing to be able to do what I love for a living. But to be right there in the thick of things, the milestone is huge for our sport and for females and, you know, all across the board, even in mainstream media, it's like just goes to show that girls can accomplish anything they set their minds to.
NHRA Nitro is available on demand at WFOradio.com. WFO Radio is worldwide. Racing fans from 51 countries and 6 continents have signed on to the best racing show in the world, WFORadio.com.
I fly like paper, get high like planes. If you catch me at the border, I go be the Zimmerman. If you come around...
NHRA Nitro here on WFO Radio. Got a couple of weeks till the countdown resumes, and we are breaking it down and thinking about what's going on. But I also love these times because we get to reflect on some other stories that are happening in the world of drag racing and maybe draw some attention to some things that are out there in our fellow media outlets, like, for instance, CompetitionPlus.com, who Bobby Bennett, when he comes on the show, is always bringing the heat, giving his unfettered opinions on everything that is going on. But something he has been doing recently are these Video Legends series on CompetitionPlus.tv. And the most recent one, legendary drag racing photographer Steve Reyes, caught my eye. Very cool. We've all basically grown up and understood the drag racing and the inside world of drag racing through many of his photographs. And Bobby said, hey, let's get him on the show. And I said, yes, let's do it. Joining us now, legendary drag racing photographer Steve Reyes joins us now. Steve, welcome to WFO.
Thank you very much.
Well, how did you think the piece came out on CompetitionPlus.com? Let's critique Bobby's work.
Oh, Bobby did a fine job. He always puts, 200% into anything he does. So I had no problems working with Bobby.
It is on the front page of CompetitionPlus.com right now in the Legends series. When you were asked to go back and think about stories and think about just different aspects of it, I just got done watching the piece. I recommend everybody check it out. But is it difficult to talk about yourself in legendary status?
Well, it's not. I don't think of myself as legendary status. This is what I've done for the last, 50 years, and you got to do something to pay the rent, so to speak, and this is something that I never felt that I worked. I mean, this is what I love to do. So when you're doing what you love, it's not work. You go with the flow, and I've been very fortunate to, just ride that wave, and here we are.
The wave of the sport, a time period that I can honestly tell you was ahead of me. My father lived it and enjoyed it and, of course, indoctrinated me into the sport because of the era, and I'm sure many of your photographs capturing this traveling road show, this crazy scene of people going out there and buying parts and making them go fast, and sometimes they blew up and sometimes they were crazy. And your photography pretty much capturing the whole thing as it went.
Well, it's just it's telling the story. It's like being the guy that plays the mandolin, the minstrel or whatever, that follows the storyteller, that follows the knight around who's doing all these battles, and you're basically telling a story of what these people are doing, because there's other people that are interested in the whole spectrum, and I was just basically out there, putting the message out and promoting a sport, obviously, that I loved and obviously they loved also. It's not so much, like I said, it wasn't a job. It was a pleasure bringing that out and standing on top of a mountain and just yelling it out for everybody to hear, and I just tried to do it visually with my photographs.
We have spoken with a lot of successful people on this show. As you know, racing is full of a lot of successful people, mm-hmm. both in racing but also in business, in life, which is sure. the reason they are enabled to have a hobby like racing. Mm-hmm. You started out at 14 years old. You got involved in this, and you were able to make it into your career. And even some things that at the time maybe seemed bad turned out to be good. I'm going to eventually ask you what advice you would give to our audience about how to be successful. But before we get to that, tell me about when you first found out you couldn't stand on the starting line, that you were going to have to shoot from the top end of the racetrack. Were you bummed out about that?
At first, because I had made the effort to get to this particular race, which would have been Bakersfield in 1967, and I was under the understanding I had a credential, which I had really busted my tail to get, and I got there and to the event, and the promoters looked at me and said, "Yeah, go away, kid." So I basically, okay, well, I was there. I mean, it's not, I'm not going to slink away and go hide. I'm going to shoot some photos. I don't care where I have to be, but I was going to shoot photos. So I went like in the half track and shot some nice two-car races and things like that. And then I ventured down to the finish line. There was nobody down there. There was, so I put my trusty, $3 telephoto on, and sure enough, people come through blowing the blowers off and things like that. And it's like, whoa, this is pretty exciting down here at the other end. And once I got those particular photos were published by Mike Doherty in the Drag Racing Almanac and a few other venues that he was associated with, I had no problems. It was basically that opened the door for me. Mike Doherty did, and then of course Doris Herbert at Drag News also. We kind of made up after the snafu over the credential. And it was kind of like, full speed ahead. Let's go get them. And I haven't looked back since.
So funny that something that was initially a negative turned out to be almost the doorway that ignited your career. Would you say
correct. Yeah. That's definitely, it was, like I said, go away, kid. You bother me. We don't have any credential. Keep trying, but there's nothing here for you. And that's exactly what Ed Eaton and Gil Cohen, who are running the Bakersfield event, basically looked at me and told me, you know, there's nothing here for you. Go away. Okay, well, I was going to get it done. I was, you know, one of those stubborn kid photographers that I didn't take no for an answer back then. And like you said, I turned a negative situation into definitely a positive one.
In the piece on competitionplus.com, folks, you should check it out. Steve Reyes, Legends, the series. You talk about how you're a Frankenstein's monster of all the photographers that came before you. But if you photographed the golden era of what most people consider drag racing now, who came before you and how long were they doing it and what were they shooting and where were they shooting that you were able to borrow little bits and pieces from their style? It seems like, where were you seeing these photographs? Just in magazines? I am thinking about the world without digital, without internet, without all of this, how different it must have been.
It's just in the print media, in magazines. I would pick up magazines like old Hot Rods and Car Craft and look, and oh, this is really cool, and Drag Racing Magazine and things like that, and I would see I would read the photo credits. I wanted to see who these guys were, and Jim Kelly and Ernie Eckert and Chester Kirk and Al Yates, and I mean all these guys that I was like, whoa, I'm just drooling over their photographs because they're really cool. And I had it in my mind, I want to do this, because I love the sport, the cars and the noise and the fumes and all that. And these were the guys that, you know, I would try to get a drag news. I'd try to get a Drag Sport Illustrated. I'd go to the local speed shop and I'd stand in line for 2 hours just to get a drag news or a drag sport so I could study the photographs and look at who shot what. The action, the true action paper of the time, or booklet, or however you want, the format was kind of a little magazine format, was Drag Sport Illustrated. And they had some incredible photos in there. Charlie Strutt and Tim Marshall were just starting out, and Mike Mitchell. These guys were kid photographers too. And basically they had just some outstanding photography, and it's like, I want to do this, and I want to get stuff as good or better, and that's the motivation. That's kind of what lit the fire under me to try to get equal with those guys. Not so much beat them, but I wanted to be in the same class as those guys.
What I can't wrap my arms around, and I know the reason, I got into the radio business right at the tail end of audio tape, and I saw what it was like to cut tape and splice tape, and then digital came, and it just changed everything, and oh, thank goodness. Mm-hmm. I can't imagine you getting those shots, one shot, one hit, very often, being limited by the number of exposures that you had. How difficult was it to determine what you were going to shoot, when you were going to shoot, knowing that you had limitations, now?
Okay, it's all basically timing, good luck, have a guardian angel on your shoulder for some of these cars, because the parts factor, flaming and explosions are definitely, you know, keyed into that. But it basically, when I first started shooting, I had limited funds. I had one camera, two lenses, and the film was expensive, the processing was expensive, and here I am, I'm trying to pay my, you know, pay rent, $125 a month rent, selling photographs in the pits at Fremont. I don't have a motor drive, I have just a single shot. So you make those photos count, and I learned how to make those photos count. And it's the old thumb drive, no motor drive. You use your thumb. If somebody is doing a big wheel stand or exploding or whatever, you shoot and you wind with your thumb. So I got pretty good with the old thumb action there, until I did finally get a motor drive when I located from Northern California. I moved to Southern California. I abused a credit card. I had my first credit card, and I went out and bought a Nikon motor drive, and then I was getting, you know, I was using more film, but I was also selling more photos. So it all paid for itself, so to speak.
In the piece, which we are encouraging people to check out, competitionplus.com, you reference a photograph. While you were taking the photograph, you were multitasking in a way that I will not reveal on the show. People are going to have to listen. Was that a motor drive, or were you triple multitasking while taking the top-end funny car flying into the air, the body that shot into the air, and you were doing something else that I will not reveal what it is while you were taking the photograph? Was that motor drive or thumb?
That was a motor drive, and that was three shots. That was the pinnacle of it was the last shot, and there's three photos. The first photo is me. I'm turning the camera, and I'm hitting the button as I'm turning the camera. So it's kind of like the negative. It's at a weird angle. But then the next two are really nice. And I was really surprised when those came out as well as they did. And like you said, we'll let the folks figure this one out on their own here.
Multitasking. It can be a good thing for everybody sometimes.
And
your photographs kind of led you into other arenas. Suddenly you're taking pictures of cars, and then next thing you know, you're taking pictures of hot babes with cars, which, if we can make the cars thing any better, you figured out how to do it.
Well, yeah, the cars with the women, and the, you put really cool race cars out there, and you're going to have the women come. And that was a no-brainer. I mean, I also went from the cars in the early 80s. I photographed Major League Baseball for a while, and that was a car deal that got me into doing the Major League Baseball. I photographed Reggie Jackson's cars, and then Reggie said, "Hey, shoot some baseball for me." Well, then I met the curator of the Baseball Hall of Fame, and he said, "Hey, can you shoot some stuff for us?" So it's just the cars have been a stepping stone, whether you want to shoot, you know, women unclothed or baseball players, and then I ended up shooting NHL hockey for a few years also. So it's all a big circle, so to speak. But the women are they're fun, but once in a while you get an irate boyfriend or irate husband, so you just kind of like know what you're doing, so to speak.
You're a pretty large man in stature, so I think you'll be able to handle yourself. What about not knowing what you got when you're shooting, when you're pulling that trigger? And I speak with a lot of the photographers out there today, and they come running right over. Look what I got. You know immediately. It's instant gratification, just like our society mm-hmm. is. What about when you were doing it prior to digital, when you didn't know? What was that feeling like? I think I got it. I don't know. What was cool? What was not cool? That had to be a different experience.
Well, if you're a real idiot, then you would start yelling and hollering at everybody, telling them how wonderful your stuff is before you have processed it. And I learned real early on, you don't start being braggadocious about your photography, because you have to go home and process that stuff. And you could have the lens cap on. Yeah, I mean, from that standpoint, you just remain cool, calm. Somebody asks you if you got that particular photo, say, "I think so." And then, you know, you obviously want to scream it out to the world, "Yeah, I think I got that photo." But no, you go home and you meticulously process your film. You hold it up after, you know, having it in the fixer. And you look, and if that image is there, then you can celebrate and, you know, dance around your house or whatever you want to do. But I don't understand looking at the cameras of today. All they are computers. They're point and shoot computers. That's all they are. And I think if three quarters or most of these guys had to shoot with cameras like I had to use back in the day, they'd pull their hair out, because one, they'd have a hard time figuring out the exposures, and two, they would go crazy because they don't have that instant, "Oh, looky here, look what I got, you know, what I shot." You know, they would go crazy.
Is there a current photographer that is out there on the tour that you are a fan of their work in the way you were a fan of the people that originally got you into? Is there someone that is a contemporary now that is putting out work that you say, wow, that's great stuff?
Well, yeah, there's a few guys that Mark Gortz, who shoots for NHRA. I mean, I've known Mark since he was probably 3 years old or something. I knew his dad when his dad was the flag starter at Fremont Drag Strip in the mid '60s. Mark is incredible, and then Teresa Long, who also works for NHRA, she's one of the best. Of course, you got Mark Rebillas. He's a pretty good old guy. I mean, he's gotten some really great stuff. So there's a few guys: Ron Lewis, Gary Nastassi. You know, I could sit here and probably list you at least a dozen or so guys out there that I know that they know one end of the camera from the other, and quite a few of those guys started out with film. They basically didn't just, you know, somebody just didn't throw a digital computer point and shoot in their hands and say, go shoot photos. These guys know how to process the black and white film. They know how to process color film. They know how to shoot the film. And that, I think that gives them an edge over any of the guys that just started with digital. So, yeah, there's some guys that out there I know that there's some pretty good guys out there.
Regarding the sport of drag racing, I don't know if there's a better person to ask about where it was and where it's going than you, having been watching the whole thing take place through your viewfinder for so many years and seeing it. You reference in the piece on CompetitionPlus.com the stories that you really don't want to tell a story on the air or on tape about anyone specific. There are many, but in private, off the air, you would. But I think about that, and I think, man, everyone who was in this seemed to be having so much fun. It was like a living cannonball run. They were running across the country. Things were happening. Things were breaking out. Now, in our modern era, 2014, it's a lot more corporate. It's a lot more buttoned down. The stories like that, fun stuff, might be happening maybe. But the world is just a totally different place. Steve, what do you think about where the sport is at the moment? And is this something that can once again build into something big, or are we, in your opinion, going to be a niche thing that we can enjoy for as long as we can enjoy it? What is your general assessment of where we are right now, drag racing?
Well, the drag racing is flourishing nostalgia-wise. The hot rod reunions, the people want to go back to the good old days, the golden era. The restored cars, the replica cars, that seems to be growing and by leaps and bounds. Now your drag racing you have today is not drag racing; it's 1,000-foot racing, because 1320 is drag racing, a quarter mile is drag racing. This is 1,000-foot drag racing they have now, which like you said, corporate, et cetera, et cetera. So it's basically the battle of the corporations out there. I know these guys have to stay pretty squeaky clean and everything. It's not like the the craziness, obviously, that, you know, that I experienced back in the day, you know, with the groupies and all this other wacky stuff. But it's just night and day. And I, to be honest, I'm not around the newer or current drag racing to really give a hardcore opinion. I only go to one race a year now, and that's Gainesville. It's local here, and I go out and I photograph it for a couple of smaller venues, but I've noticed the reunions. So those seem to be growing by leaps and bounds, and I think that's the key to this whole drag racing thing. That and your down home bracket racing, your little guys, will never let the sport die. There's always going to be a guy that's like, my car is better than your car, so let's go do it. Now, as far as the nitromethane and all that, those guys that seem to be, they're going to price themselves out of business with the parts and the breakage and things like that, because it's so expensive to race now. And I mean, when you see, you know, larger corporations bowing out and going to do other things, that's kind of a telltale sign right there.
Steve, I appreciate you coming on the show. I mentioned at the start of the interview, now I will ask you, for our listeners out there who like to hear successful people reveal their secrets to success and then apply them to their own lives, what would you say, what guiding principles got you from a kid who is trying to get a credential to one of the most successful drag racing photographers of all time?
Well, basically, I live with one particular credo, and that's if you tell somebody you're going to do something, you do it. You keep your word. And people remember you. Businesses remember you. Racers remember you. And when you're straight with people and when you're honest with people, that will all reflect back on you. That's it.
I love it. I'm going to put it in the file. Steve, thank you very much. Excellent piece by Bobby Bennett, Competition Plus. The Legends, the series, Steve Reyes, My Photos Are My Legacy. And I know that I grew up watching and seeing a lot of your photography. I certainly appreciate you coming on the show and sharing a little bit about the piece and what was going on behind the scenes. Thank you very much for coming on WFO Radio. I greatly appreciate it.
Thank you for having me, and I appreciate anyone and everyone that's ever read a photo credit out there.
Yeah, yes, that that is infrequent, but when it happens, it's a big deal.
That's right.
Steve, before we let you go, you've got this treasure trove of photographs that you've had for years. Are those for sale? If our audience is interested in picking up an original Steve Reyes photograph, is there somewhere that they can go to log on maybe online and see what you have? How do you do that?
Well, I have photographs. I do have an eBay. If you're looking for some photos on any kind of photos, to eBay and you type in Hot Rods to Hell, that'd be me, and my email address, which is sreyes@reyesontour.com, and if you got a certain request that I can come up with, and my wife handles the photo business, so she'd be more than happy to work with you. And I've done six also, four for CarTech, two published. I did two published yourself books, and right now I'm working on a brand new book called Kings of the Quarter Mile for CarTech, which is going to have rear engine dragsters from their birth to today, basically, and it's going to feature photography, my stuff, and then all my friends that are some of the best photographers in the world have thrown a few photos at me, and we're going to do a whole chapter on nothing but wild, wild photos.
Well, that is awesome. Steve, great job. Thank you so much.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Thanks, Steve. Steve Reyes with us here on WFO Radio, and you can go onto his website and pick up some pictures and just the photographs in the piece. Bobby Bennett has done a lot of these Legends things. He keeps getting better and better, but this one particularly great because of the photographs. You get to see some of Steve's great photographs. Check it out on CompetitionPlus.com. And Bobby and the folks at CompetitionPlus.com do a great job of spreading the word about WFO Radio. And so we reciprocate. We got this thing going back and forth. And it is greatly appreciated, the work that Comp Plus and those guys do for the sport of drag racing. Got to have some news out there. Got to have some things to read out there. And you can check out the CompetitionPlus.com news and links right through WFORadio.com just by clicking news, which is kind of cool if you're into drag racing news, if that happens to be you. And how about that, folks? What a show. Victor Cagnazzi was awesome. Absolutely awesome. Vanilla Ice, fantastic. I did not record him doing Ice Ice Baby. He did about three songs. He did a three-song set, and it was cool seeing Daryl and the family and all the young people all rocking out. It was a great time. Everyone was dressed in white. I wore white. Mostly. I don't have all white. I don't have the all white suit from Scarface just yet, but it's something I aspire to. And of course, Steve Reyes for coming on the show. Just tremendous. Now, questions for Reinhardt next week. Call him in 954-889-6796. Call in those questions or email them Joe@WFOradio.com. great way to get your questions in, suggestions. Who would you like to hear on the show? And remember, the show goes right through the off season. We're going to continue doing the show when they are closing up after Pomona. It's over. That's it. We're done. Time to go pass out on the couch. We are going to continue wrapping up the storylines, speaking with the champions, tracking down people, finding the behind the scenes. So subscribe. Either that or download the free app for iPhone, iPad, or Android. It's free. You can also listen on TuneIn and Stitcher. It's digital, baby. You can get it anywhere. Well, that is going to do it. Alan Reinhart, great job answering questions. He's in the shop right now working on the Stang. He's got like montage music in the background. It's like a scene out of the A-Team. He's working on stuff. Or MacGyver, even better. You know, montage music. Of course, Victor, going to be out there running in Vegas with the Copo. That's going to be cool. Look up that YouTube video. Vanilla Ice, the Daryl Gwynn Foundation, and Steve Reyes, all for coming on the show. Thank you so much. The WFO Radio t-shirts are now available. They are now on sale. Just go to the website, WFO Store, click to shop, make your order. You can use credit card or PayPal. Let's blow these shirts out there, man. Let's get them out there so we can order some more. That's the way I'm looking at it. I'm interested to see how long it takes to blow through this initial offering. The IPO of the WFO Radio t-shirt, the initial public offering. It will be interesting to see how well they go for the WFO Radio listeners out there. Hopefully you like them. We put a lot of work and effort into them. I think they came out great. Check them out. That's going to do it for WFO Radio NHRA Nitro. Wednesday, 8 p.m., WFO Radio Ignition. We're going to talk about, obviously, the final race of the second round of the NASCAR Chase. And will Jimmy Johnson, Brad Keselowski, and Dale Earnhardt Jr. all be eliminated? We're going to talk about the brawl in the pit area with Matt Kenseth and Brad Keselowski, with Denny Hamlin coming in off the top rope with a metal chair. Practically what it was like. We're going to talk about it. Tony Stewart backing up into Brad. We're going to talk about it. Not to mention Formula One. We're going to get into all of it right here on the show. The WFO Fantasy League Trophy is en route. There's a lot of great things happening. If you are a motorsports fan, we hope you will stick with us right here on WFO. Thanks to everyone behind the scenes. It's greatly appreciated. We'll see you next time right here on WFO Radio.
WFO!
The views and opinions of the hosts, guests, or callers do not necessarily reflect that of the station ownership, advertisers, or agencies.
I love WFO Radio.